which in its way has never been equal. Probably never can be equal to him, because you may never see five hitters in a row like those five come up in an All-Star game. Well, what'd you get him with? Mostly the screwball?
That's the only thing I got over the plate, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't start off, you see, I started off kind of bad. You get all pumped up, you know, right in the week. God damn, you just want to get started, you know. And hell, you wait around.
They got to have all of that pageantry.
You know, bench, and you walk up and down and just get this damn thing started, you know. Mm-hmm. And you get out there and I was naturally, you get nervous energy build up, you know, and they try to throw the ball harder than you do throw it. I walked Heine Manouche. He was the first hitter. Charlie Garinger was the second hitter. I got behind him and I got one close enough, and he singled the right field off of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then now you got Ruth Gary in Boston. Terry a Hall of Famer, Frisch a Hall of Famer, later I'm talking about, and Pie Trainer a Hall of Famer, and Gary Hartner a Hall of Famer, all gathered out to me. But none of them could help me. I didn't.
No, you had to do it.
They still couldn't help me anything.
That's great.
And all, but it did give me a little bit of time to, kind of get control of all of my emotions and every other thing, and realize that now and then you're going to.
You got to turn it
at
off.
Least you're going to. Don't. You're going to beat yourself, you know, this way, you know.
That's right.
Hell, you're not giving yourself a chance or anything else in the world. You're going to have to start getting the ball over the plate and give yourself a chance. I didn't expect to get out of it without, you know,
some damage.
things happening. But I did compose myself down to normal. I knew what I was doing all the time. But it just, you know, just to get that edge off. Damn, you get charged up.
Most athletes, when they enter a big contest, are tight for a few minutes.
Well, if you just get started, you know, that's the main thing. You, then you get your mind occupied and
you're in the groove.
Concentrating now, and hell, you can. You know, then you can control all your emotions and everything else. But of course, All-Star games were new then.
That's right. you were in the first one.
Yeah. I finished up the first game in Chicago the next year.
You were in this one. You were in 35, I suppose, for 5-10 years in a row. You were in them.
Yeah. But you're talking about something like that happening again. Do you know that the nine men that started for the American League all walked right into the Hall of Fame?
That from that 34 game?
Yes, sir. Every one of them right into the Hall of Fame. Now, there hasn't been anything like that.
No, since never will again.
No, I don't think so either. Actually,
that's a wonderful statistic.
Actually, in the two teams, they only picked 20 players. Those in 1934, only picked 20 players for each team. That's 40 players. 26 of them are in the Hall of Fame.
Carl, they had. Why did they have so many great stars in those days, and they got so few now?
It's very easy, I think. I believe, not because I played in it alone, that the decade of the 30s was the greatest decade in baseball, and probably will be on and on and on, if they judge it right, will be, for one reason. They were all hungry ball players. Not just to get a bite to eat, you know, and have something to eat. But they like to have a home, and they like to have a family, and they have to raise kids, and you know, just to things in life. The depression going on,
Boy,
I will tell you, You wouldn't see one of those guys taking it and saying, "Oh, I got this or that." This.
Yeah. Because they weren't going to leave that lineup.
Then the hell no. Somebody put in there, he's going to lose his job. They were just what you would call fighting for their job all the time.
Right.
All the time. And they played. They played them the hell all of them, playing them near the whole. When they said they were hurt, boy, they were hurt to get out of any line. You wasn't going to get them out of that lineup.
A classic example of that is Wally Pipp.
Yeah.
He gave up one day to let Gehrig play and never saw first base again.
Never saw first base again. Well, compare that to today, for Christ's sake.
Oh.
5-year contract, multiple contracts.
No trade contracts.
No trade. Guaranteed contracts.
Guaranteed contracts, exactly.
Gee, I mean, it's so ridiculous that a guaranteed multiple contracts, that's the worst thing that could possibly happen to a ball player. Because he's going to just go in about second gear, and figure on turning it on that last year. Well, by that time it's too late.
And then the guaranteed contract, likewise. What the hell, the guy is going to get his money whatever happens.
It don't make any difference. They're going to get their money.
And the free agency bit is, I think, all told, a pretty bad thing. The worst of it is that they're giving some of these guys unheard of contracts when you look at their records, and then they don't produce like Dave Goltz and Don Stanhouse and Rick Wise and a bunch of others. So they release them and swallow that enormous salary for two or three years.
Right.
And the player hasn't lost a thing. He's got his money from the word go.
The players have gotten everything that they've asked for. Everything that they've asked for. And hell, another difference that I noticed, of course, I was raised on a farm, there's no more farm boys coming into baseball, there were a hell of a lot of them way back then.
There aren't as many farm boys. Farms
there's no farms
business.
Anymore, it's
That's
all
right.
machinery.
Yeah.
I lived 12 miles from where Lloyd and Paul Winter grew up. They grew up on the farm right over there. I played against Lloyd in high school.
I'll be darned.
And, I tell you, a farm boy, you got work to do. You start in when you're about 10 years old, and you and the chores and everything else, you have an obligation of duty. They give, the folks give you a duty. Now, you've got to do this every, get the wood in, or something. It's all wood stoves in,
Yeah, I know.
And milk the cows, everything. They start real early. That's sort of a built-in thing, that they had to do things.
Of working and producing and discipline and all of that.
The whole bit is they grow up with. Well, I tell you, those country boys made pretty good ball players too. Whenever you got up there, as far as like you said, discipline and dedication and everything else.
They wanted something, a better way of life.
Absolutely. They had something to work for. You've lost all of that. None of that goes on anymore. My God, during that strike, some of those player representatives get up there, and it sounded like they were really in court today. Pleading cases in court or something like that, education, they had and everything else was going just like they were in a courtroom.
That's right. No, it's gotten out of hand, I think. Tell me now, you were in 3 World Series, but the Giants weren't lucky enough to win any of them, were they?
We won one.
Which one?
We beat Washington 4 out of 5 games.
Oh, that's in 33. Yeah, you won 2 of those.
I won 2 of those games.
And I guess Fitzsimmons...
Fitz lost the only game. Schumacher won one, and Lukey won one in relief. Doc Lukey.
Was he with you guys then?
He was. He won the final game, the fourth game. Dolph Lugie.
Yeah. He had, I'm trying to see what his season was. Did he have much of a season?
No, just a short reliever.
Yeah, he was 8-2 in short relief, but he had had some really great years.
Oh, he was an old guy.
Yeah, I know. He was in the 1919 World Series.
Sure, in Cincinnati. Oh, yeah. he had some good years.
Yeah. All right. And in 36-7, both years you were against the Yankees.
Yeah, right.
What was Freddie Fitzsimmons like?
Freddie was strictly a knuckleball pitcher. Mm-hmm. Everything a knuckleball. He never had any trouble with John McGraw, you see, then, because he threw all knuckleballs anyway, you see.
Right.
So he never did have any trouble with McGraw. But he was a vicious competitor.
That's what I heard.
They called him Fat Freddie, but they wasn't an ounce of fat on him. He just had a round body, you see, and he'd just burn him up, you know. He'd just tear somebody apart, you know, when he goes. Because they wasn't an ounce of fat on him at all, just had a round body.
When did they trade him over to Brooklyn?
Oh, let's see, about...
Well, he was in Brooklyn in 38.
Yeah, right around that time.
Maybe he was there. Let's see if he was there the previous year. No, he was. He came over during the 37 season. Yeah, he was 2-2 with the Giants and 4-8 with Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Did Terry think he was about the end of the rope for a while?
Yeah, I think he did, but he had come up with Cliff Melton and Harry Gumbert, if you remember.
Oh, yeah.
See, and that's the reason why.
Didn't think he needed Freddie.
Didn't he?
Well, Freddie had some pretty good years with Brooklyn.
Yeah, he sure as hell did.
Yeah. 16-2 in 1940. Yeah. This is hard to beat.
It sure was.
And Hal Schumacher, was he? Was he as good a pitcher as Fitzsimmons?
Well, he was a different type of pitcher. He's a terrific competitor, too. Mm-hmm. I don't know what he'd have done with McGraw there, though, because he was strictly a fastball sinker ball pitcher. Mm-hmm. He had a good one. And his curve was more like a slider now. Uh-huh. He didn't have a good curve. He had one, but it's more like a slider now. Mm-hmm. But he had that good, heavy downer, a sinker fastball.
Larry Benton was more of the old McGraw style, wasn't he?
No, Larry. No. Larry that was strange. That's the first year I went up there, you know, and Larry had that good year, took 125 mm-hmm. games. And for some reason or other, he let Benton throw a fastball because he didn't have a curve to speak of hardly at all.
Yeah, he did have a little live
fastball,
mm-hmm.
and McGraw let him throw it, and he crushed all the hitters. He crossed them all up because they knew that with McGraw, all they were ever going to get. And for 1 year, I'm telling you, he had that terrific year, and then after that, they got on to, you know, so well, hell, he throws fastball, he don't throw curve, he just faded out.
How was Travis Jackson?
Travis was, it's a damn shame that he had to wait for 40 years to get in the Hall of Fame.
I'm going to talk to him later when I go through Arkansas.
Oh, good. Yeah. I will give him my regards, he and Mary and everybody else. And I sent him a telegram and told him. I said, well, it's just about 40 years late on you.
Yeah. Of course, there are a bunch of others that are waiting that are never going to make it, Carl.
I can't understand.
I can't either. Well, for one thing, I mean, they got the old timers committee or whatever on the Hall of Fame, just two a year. I think that's their limit. And they'll never catch up with all the people that belong in the Hall of Fame from the old days.
Geez, how about Enos Slaughter?
Yeah, you can make a list this long.
He was a Pete Rose type ball player.
That's right.
I never saw a loaf of damn step on the baseball game in my life.
He wouldn't know how to do it. Yeah.
And they just absolutely... because you come up there, they called him country, and I guess that country thing must have been what done it. I don't know.
I can't think of any else. Fred Lindstrom had some pretty good years with you.
He had some great years of hitting. But he was, Freddie wasn't the all-out ball player. Freddie come first, and then baseball come second. Reason proved it to me. Freddie was a hell of a third baseman. He got a little bit leery about those bad hops, and Freddie had a lot of pretty teeth, you know.
He didn't want to lose them.
And this is when John McGraw had the club, and he moved to center field.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Yes, sir, he did. And that's to McGraw. I don't know how, but my God, he moved to center field. He didn't play third very too long.
Freddie didn't want any more of those bad hops going over his head like in the last inning of the World Series in 24.
Thinking about that. I tell you, he just had a little bit of selfishness about him there. He wasn't at all out, you know, just at all out.
Well, you know, when he died recently, I read somewhere little story where somebody was talking to his son. Your son wrote an article, I guess. Daddy, why didn't you ever play catch with me? Freddie would never do anything like interesting his kid in baseball.
Is that right?
Yeah. It's quite a story. It was kind of discouraging to read it. Tell me, how about old Lefty O'Doul?
Well, Lefty was he was a con artist with umpires and players, everything. He was always conning, you know, to get the best of things, you know, every damn thing, you know.
He was an operator, that's
what he was some kind of an operator.
But he also could hit.
Yeah, he could do that. That was just about it.
Yeah. No, he wasn't much for anything. He started out as a pitcher.
With the Yankees,
And in his last years, you saw Ed Rausch on your team.
Oh yeah, he had slowed down. He wasn't a ball player, was he?
Well,
he
couldn't have been, no.
No.
Tell me about JoJo Moore.
JoJo Moore was a he was a ball player. I don't know just exactly what they mean by that. I never did know, but I know what I mean by it. I'm just glad he played on my team.
Good for you.
I'm telling you, he was a strange leadoff man, I'll tell you this for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, leadoff man's supposed to get base on balls and get hit.
Get on base.
Not Joe. He just wants you to get that ball close enough to
and
he
can swing it.
Here's an actual story. We went into Cincinnati one day, and Bill McKechnie, Junior, senior, was and Joe was leading off for us, you know, and Joe, in the game, Joe took four swings. Every one of them was the first pitch, and every one of them was a line drive. Two of them were caught, and two of them were base hit. There was an article in the paper that McKechnie had a meeting after the game, and he told all the pitchers that if you throw a first pitch to Joe Moore and he swings at it, it's going to cost you $50 every time he swings at it. and you should see that next day out there, that first pitch that's going to Joe
Moore. Like pitch outs, huh?
Oh, Christ, you're way up here and everywhere. And $50, you know, then.
In those days, you didn't go around like that. I hope to talk to JoJo. He's living in a little place in Texas.
Gauss, Texas.
I've tried to phone him. I wrote him and told him I was coming through there and that I'd like to talk with him. And I said, I'll try to phone you before I get there. Well, I sat down just the other day before leaving San Diego, called to get his phone number, called the operator in area code, whatever. And they said, no, he's in... Gauss is in area code 512. Call 512, and they said, no, he's in area code 713. I went back and forth like that about three times, and they never would. No, we don't have it. It's not in here. I said, well, somebody's got to have it. So when I get to San Antonio, I'll try again. Yeah. And if nothing else, I'll just stop off in the little town because it's right on my way. It's not any trouble to get to him. And there can't be, I don't think there are 1,000 people in the place.
No.
So everybody will know him.
There wasn't. I saw Joe not too long ago. But see, I got a little museum in my hometown in Meeker, Oklahoma.
Good.
And I don't know, of course, I moved around so much afterwards, and you don't get a whole tub full of stuff, you know, back in those days.
No.
But the MVP is about the only
yeah.
real thing there was.
True.
And I used to go up to, I worked out a farm system in New York, and I went out up to Cooperstown. Mr. Stoner went up. Cooperstown, if you don't, you're careful, you'll never find Cooperstown if you start to drive up there from any direction. I don't care where.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to get to. That's right.
And the little old, then there was just little old single lane roads, you know, just going
yeah.
up one and through those trees.
Yeah.
Mr. Stoner used to get one of those mallard. Flyers, you know, that lands on water.
Mm-hmm.
He'll hold about 5 or 6 people, and he'd rent that, and he'd take us up in and land right on the lake there at
yeah.
the hotel, you know, and then go back. So we went up there every year, as long as we were in New York,
mm-hmm.
and when we moved to California, we didn't. But I don't know. It just seemed to me like it wasn't sort of a the Hall of Fame. Actually, the youngsters would get the most benefit from the Hall of Fame, and that is hidden way off up there.
Nobody can get to it.
Youngsters in America,
yeah.
they're going to be millions of them grow up and never even hear about that, let alone see
that
Hall of Fame. And that kind of went against my grain. What little stuff I had and did have, I had it down there, and they built a new little city hall there in the little hometown of Meeker, and they put a glass cubicle in there, you know, and they
yeah.
got it all up. And then Joe come up. That was about 3 or 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a big time. All the people there were just tickled by that, you know, see Joe. See, Joe was the only guy that scored the run, the 18-inning 1-0 game that I've been seeing.
When was that? What year?
Well, that was 1933. Beat the Cardinals.
You went all 18 innings?
Yes, sir.
For goodness sakes.
You did.
33.
1933.
Yeah. Let me make a note of that. I can find that game somehow.
Yeah. Well, Joe. Joe scored the only run in that game, and they were all glad to see him. Joe talked to them and everything else. Went over big.
Yeah. All right. I sure hope I can get to Joe then. How was old Gus Mancuso as a catcher?
Gus was a good catcher.
Mm-hmm.
Good catcher. He's he wasn't a bad hitter, you know. He did not have power.
That's right.
Or anything else
for a catcher.
He's a pretty good hitter.
Yeah.
He had a pretty good
good average.
Good average. Mm-hmm. He was, I guess, you know, everybody has faults. He's a little bit balls in the dirt and everything else, you know. But I don't like to say things like in print or anything like that about people.
How about Dick Bartel?
Oh, Rowdy Richard. He was a character. Everybody slid in the second base down there. They were trying. You see that guy trying to cut me? You see he was trying to cut me, you know? Actually, was sort of a paranoid in that respect, you know, that everybody was trying to get him, you know. And pitching against him we didn't have Philadelphia had him.
That's
we
right.
made the trade about 1938 somewhere along there.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to just get me teed off, you know. He'd get up there a little like a little old Benny Rooster, you know, and he'd get right on the damn plate, you know. If he's that close to the plate, you know, you're going to try to pitch him inside.
Sure.
You're not going to get the ball out here the way
that's
you
right.
hit it.
That's right.
If you come close to him, well, he'd You know, like he's going to come out after you or something like
yeah.
that. You know, all you're trying to do is just, well, you're not throwing at him. He's thinking everybody's
They're
just,
saying the same thing these days about Bill Buckner.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, he's getting knocked down with pitches all the time, and he thinks they're doing it deliberately, and somebody said, hell, he's out over the plate.
Well, you just stand right up against
pitchers,
that plate.
Sure,
right?
A pitcher's got a right to pitch on the inside.
Right. You've got to admit Martell was exactly the same way.
Yeah, you must have read that Buckner and manager Elia had a scuffle in the dugout. Buckner had been brushed back two or three times, and he went out and ordered the Cub pitcher to hit the next batter coming up, and the pitcher threw at his pretty close to his head, I guess. So when he came into the dugout, Elia tangled with Buckner over taking over the managerial prerogative. You saw Ty Cobb briefly when he was
just that one year.
How did he impress you?
Well, I mean, like I said, he never said a word to me. He didn't say anything to me at all. I was just with him in spring training and everything else, you know, and he was... But the only thing I remember, I mean, he had some young left-hand hitter up there, and he tried to teach him how to, you know, how to hit curves, you know, young. Only he didn't get up there to hit. I might just let one fly, you know, somewhere. But, I stood out there and he hit curves. But I'd stand out there and throw curves, for 15, 20, 30 minutes, and I'm telling him what to do, how to hit the curve. And that's about the only thing I remember about Cobb.
You should have just told him, get up there yourself, Cobb.
I was thinking about it. No, I wasn't going to tell him.
Not those days, no.
Maybe if he did get up there, I might get one a little too close.
You know, you're talking about minors in those years, lots of old players coming back down the ladder. That was a big thing until, up close to World War II. Players who had been in the majors for a while and didn't work fast enough, or their eyes were weakening, but they gradually dropped down in the minors. Pacific Coast League, for instance, had about two-thirds ex-major leaguers in their lineups for a long time. Now you don't see that anymore.
Oh, hell no, you don't.
When they finish with the majors, they're gone.
Well, they were playing when I played on the Class D ball club.
Mm-hmm. Think
I've
of
been
that.
On guys that are 25 or 30 years old. Yeah. They were guys they just loved to play ball, baseball.
Now
they
you
loved,
said it.
They would get, they'd give them a job in the towns, those minor league towns,
sure.
where they work in the wintertime, and then they'd play ball one summer. Some of them 30 years old.
Didn't,
and still,
yeah.
never did get to the big
yeah.
leagues.
They did it in my hometown,
yes,
Texas.
They did it. They did it. Yeah. Hot dang, they just love to play baseball. Where do you ever see anybody now that loves to play baseball?
Not too many.
That's going to work at it.
Yeah. That's really one of the great differences, I think.
Exactly right. Something else is taking that place.
You remember any funny or unusual plays or incidents in any games that stand out in your mind? or off-field incidents involving players on your team or others that are... funny.
No, I don't.
It's hard to come up with something like that on the spur of a moment.
I took baseball too serious in order to really see anything funny.
Mm-hmm.
Honest to God, the truth. If I saw things that might be funny to somebody else. In a baseball game, that wasn't funny to me.
Yeah.
It wasn't funny to me at all. I took it so damn serious that it just wasn't funny.
How about, other than that 18-inning, 1-0 game you mentioned, any other particular game of yours that stands out in your memory?
Well, I had a... 19 and 30 Six Bill Terry traded in the winter of 35. Bill Terry, Roy Parmalee, you know. Mm-hmm. Parmalee was a he was a physical specimen.
Yeah. You
know, that, we called him Tarzan, but yep. He had a better body than Tarzan. But he was emotionally, he was just like reminds you of a kid, you know, mm-hmm. Something. You never know, because he wouldn't harm anybody, anything. But and he could pitch, pitch like hell. And we got up around the sixth inning, and he was leading. God damn, he wanted to hurry up and get that ball game over with. See, and Danny was catching a lot there, and he was, and hell, he'd just wind up and throw the ball before he ever got the sign.
Oh,
and
boy.
Everything. The catch didn't have to be on the he wanted to get, you know, get it, and then as a result, you know, sooner or later when somebody had I'd done a lot of believing in those years, you know, that
mm-hmm.
hell we pitching every fourth day, you know.
Yeah.
If you say yourself, like if it's on Sunday, the Monday you'd run all around the outfield.
Mm-hmm.
Tuesday you pitch 15 minutes of batting practice.
Hmm.
And then the next day you just get in the pepper game or so, and then the next day you start.
Yeah.
That was the routine the whole damn year through. Well, in 1933 there, when Dan was picked up in many seconds, and then we started right out and the men right up there with him in the race, and so I volunteered for it. I told Bill, and Parmalee was he was in the rotation of
mm-hmm.
I'd have a day's rest before he pitched. My day to pitch batting practice. I said, "Well, hell, Bill, if
Parmalee gets in trouble,
if he gets in trouble out of part of the inning, should be pitching batting practice." I said, "Hell, I might save a few games for him down there, you know, in the bullpen."
Mm-hmm.
Oh, great! Oh, that's good. Great. So, result, I used to, go and I save quite a lot of games for him and everything else. And now he's traded to St. Louis.
Yeah.
You know, in St. Louis, you go, generally, whenever this was early in the year, our first trip out there. And, you warm up by setting my catch, you throw towards the stands, you know,
yeah.
Him on one side, me on the other.
Yeah.
Well, generally, when we do that and go there, well, it's always Dean and, you know, me here, like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Dean Norman. Gotten bad at that time. So who the hell do you think walks out to start the game? Leroy Parmalee. He go out there laughing like hell. He kept saying, "This is the biggest mismatch that's ever happened in baseball." Just laughing like hell, and everything. Well,